There is no easy answer for the ongoing struggle over the harvest of timber from federal lands. If there were, somebody would have figured it out a long time ago. Instead, there is the timber industry and counties that once depended on timber harvest payments, pushing for more cutting on one side, and conservation groups advocating preservation of large, older trees on the other, generally. A plan to restructure the way timber is managed on the ONC lands of Western Oregon passed the U.S. House last year, sponsored by three Oregon representatives, Greg Walden, Peter DeFazio, and Kurt Schrader. Senator Ron Wyden, who currently chairs the Natural Resources Committee in the Senate, insisted the House bill would not survive the Senate. So he announced his own version with clear differences from the House version, and that bill got a hearing before Wyden's committee last week. The comments included written testimony from today's guest. Dominic Della Sala is the president and chief scientist of the Geos Institute in Ashland. He was also speaking on behalf of the Society for Conservation Biology North American section, of which he is president, and on behalf of the American Fisheries Society. So, Dominic Della Sala, welcome to the exchange. And you had a little bit of baggage coming into the hearing last week.
I did, and thanks for having me on again. And I like you guys on Facebook as well.
Oh, good. Well, it's good to know you're there. These are some interesting circumstances last week with this hearing in Washington. First of all, you got the guy who introduces the bill also being the person who chairs the hearing, taking testimony. You were not there in person, I understand it, but this was a hearing that was well anticipated, I imagine, in the conservation community.
Yeah, it was. And we had some prep leading up to this. We had convened a group of scientists to take a look at the provisions in the bill to see if they were up to par with the best available science. And the consensus across the scientific community on this is that they were not, and that there were huge assumptions being made that were risky to some of the forest values that we care about in our region.
It seems like that gets said every time there is some document pertaining to management of timberlands. In fact, I remember hearing this when the then Rogue River National Forest was proposing its management plan for 1990, that there were assumptions being made about ways trees would grow, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, do you often find that is the case on the conservation side, that assumptions are made about behavior of wildlands or trees or both?
I think so. In general, I think there's a huge disconnect between what the scientific community sees in a forest and what a legislator sees. And the scientific community, the consensus being that these forests have suffered from decades of abuse. We should be looking at restoration that also has a jobs component and protects the remaining mature forest, and not logging the last of these forests that are incredibly important for recovering our declining salmon populations, cleansing the air we breathe, bringing in new jobs in ecotourism, and just kind of holding on to the values that make this region so beautiful.
There was a lot of criticism previously of the DeFazio-Walden-Schrader bill. They're very different bills, I understand, but is this one in any way better from the conservationist's perspective?
I don't think so. I think, you know, the standard that we operate from is, are we building off of the success story of the Northwest Forest Plan? And that was a global model in ecosystem management and biodiversity conservation. It's been operating very well. The science was reaffirmed repeatedly in that plan. And so Senator Wyden's bill would look to roll back the protections that are in that plan and increase the kind of logging that we've seen that is just not sustainable in this region if we care about clean water salmon and all the other values that these forests are giving us.
Well, you know, the bill is clear in its intention, which is to help the timber industry in part by getting logs to mills, and certainly to help the counties. The ONC lands are the former Oregon and California Railroad lands. They were taken back into federal ownership after they'd been granted to the Oregon and California Railroad. They formed the backbone of the county budgets for many years in Western Oregon. Without the timber being cut, there had to be safety net money provided from Congress, which has since run out, which is why you see situations like Curry County and Josephine County almost not able to really field a sheriff's office. So there's a lot of pressure, obviously, to get something done. What would be the way that the conservation community would propose to approach this?
You know, I think there is a way forward on this. I think first and foremost, we don't want to see any more cutting of the mature forest. There's just so little left in our region. We're down to the last 15% to 20% of these forests that were here at the time of European settlement. So there's just not a lot of wiggle room there. However, we've also had decades of forestry activities that have clear-cut the hill slopes, and we need to be putting people back in those forests and restoring that landscape, reducing the fuels that are in those very fire-prone forests. And I think there are jobs in that and jobs in repairing damaged roads. And, you know, there's a lot of work that we could be doing out there that have county and a jobs component to it, but we just can't be going back into those mature forests and degrading them further because there's so little left.
The land that Senator Ron Wyden proposes to open up for a bit more logging activity, and I, you know, you can quarrel with the use of the term a bit more. I'm not trying to be scientific here. Is it within the matrix land in the Northwest Forest Plan that you identified from 1993? Because the matrix land was the area that was designated for more intensive management, yes?
It is. Some of it's in the matrix that would be moved into either a conservation emphasis area or a forestry emphasis area. And I think the important part of it is that over 100,000 acres of mature moist forests that are currently in the reserve network under the Northwest Forest Plan would move into a forestry emphasis, meaning they would get clear cut. And the stream side buffers that are protecting salmon would be reduced by a half in many cases. So those are the provisions that really aren't science-based. They're politically driven, and they're going to make the situation worse for recovering salmon and water quality and all the other benefits we're getting from those remaining forests.
You've mentioned restoration a couple of times now, Dominic. What would the restoration process look like? Where would you concentrate? Are there specific tracts of land that you have seen that you can recommend specific treatments for?
Yeah, you know, a visual that I like to use all the time is get up in an airplane. Next time you're flying over the, you know, Rogue Valley, look out the window, especially if there's snow on the ground. Lots of clear cuts out there. They stick out. There's little green blotches of the remaining forests. So what we need to do is filling those holes. So over time, that means thinning those plantations, which are the holes. They're incredibly flammable. When we get a fire that comes through this area, the fire races through those plantations, and because their fuels are really stacked up in those small trees. So I think there's an opportunity there to start thinning those forests, putting back the pieces that we've taken apart from decades of unsustainable logging, and that has a jobs component, and that's restoration.
Would the thinning part of it provide any actual merchantable timber for mills?
It could. And I think, you know, there's a lot of timber sales in this region sail through the review process when they don't include older trees. So I think that not only would you have timber flowing, but you would have it in a less controversial way.
Dominic Della Sala is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the president and chief scientist of the GEOST Institute based in Ashland. He delivered written testimony last week to the U.S. Senate committee chaired by Senator Ron Wyden about the bill by Senator Ron Wyden about how to manage the ONC lands in western Oregon on behalf of not only GEOST Institute but also the Society for Conservation Biology and the American Fisheries Society. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the proper way to approach management of the BLM forests in western Oregon. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. The charge from Senator Wyden about every tree has its own lawsuit, I'm sure you've heard that out of the hearing by now. How did that hit you?
Senator Wyden talks about extremes. That's an extreme statement because I don't know anybody that's litigating over single trees. And as I mentioned, the timber goes to the mills when it doesn't include big trees. You kind of look at the sales that go through either on BLM land or Forest Service lands. They're going through unchallenged if they don't have big trees. There's volume going to the mills. It's not the same amount that we had prior to the Northwest Forest Plan, but we were also causing the extinction of salmon and a lot of wildlife we care about when we were logging at the rate of about 2 square miles of old forest per week. Those forests cannot handle that kind of clear cutting without extreme losses to salmon water quality and, you know, the forest values that we get from those older forests.
But is the Northwest Forest Plan, and granted it's 20 years old plus now, are we even getting close to the numbers that the mills thought they would get under that?
I don't think so. It was never a promise. It was a possible scenario if all the other provisions of the plan could be met. And I think we've moved on with the last 2 decades. The public overwhelmingly in numerous polls has said it doesn't want to see the older forests cut. And so I think that socially we've moved on. It's just that there are some elements that are entrenched in old school forestry of trying to take out the last of the old trees. And that's where the controversial lies, where we can't get agreement on, you know, can we put people back to work in the woods and also protect our remaining mature forests?
There simply is no trust in the relationship, is there? I mean, I'm thinking in terms of if they were saying, well, we'll cut these big trees this year and leave these alone over here, these somewhat smaller ones. They'll be that big in 10 years. That sort of trade-off doesn't sound like it ever flies.
Well, typically what happens is they go for the cream of the crop, the last of the big trees. And, you know, it takes well over a century to get those trees back if you don't log again in those forests. So, again, you know, I use the analogy of get up in an airplane, look out the window, and those green blotches that are scattered amongst the sea of clear cuts. So what we're fighting over now, there's not a lot left out there. And to split those in half again and say we're going to log half of them, protect the other half, you're just going to have a lot more holes and a lot fewer green blotches on the landscape.
But that really is essentially what these two bills say. The House and the Senate version are both saying we'll log this half and you get the other half preserved in perpetuity. There's no attractiveness in that, I take it.
Not when you're down to the last scrap. So, you know, if we do that, if we go that direction, we are going to push salmon to the brink of extinction in this region. We're going to push some of our wildlife to the brink of extinction. And the amount of carbon dioxide emissions from the type of logging that's proposed over 20 years in this region would be equivalent to Oregon's dirtiest coal-fired power plant. That's how much CO2 we would be releasing into the atmosphere to make our climate even more unstable than it is and is becoming because of global warming.
CO2 from what? The logging machinery, the chainsaws, all that stuff?
What you do is you take a lot of those trees and you bring them down onto the ground, so you've got a lot of slash. That slash decomposes. Carbon is lost from the soil. And so as a result of that decomposition, more CO2 is released into the atmosphere. Those logs are put on trucks and shipped long distances using fossil fuels. They're processed using fossil fuels. All of that results in carbon dioxide emissions and greater pollution, the equivalent being, you know, the coal-fired power plant in Oregon.
Is there a magic number? I asked this of another conservation group recently. Is there a magic number beyond which you don't want to see a tree cut? And I'm talking about the number of the diameter, breast height of a tree.
You know, generally it's trees that have the older age characteristics. So in our region, it really varies depending on, you know, the site characteristics. But in general, wildlife tend to use trees disproportionately when they get above, let's say, 20 inches diameter breast height. And again, it varies, but that's the standard that we like to look for. And there's just so little of those big trees left on the landscape. One example is sugar pines. At the time of European settlement, there used to be massive sugar pines in this region. Now you're hard-pressed to find a big sugar pine because they were high-graded around the time of, you know, 1960, 1970. We've lost most of the big sugar pines in this region.
So the ecosystem itself, you're saying, is very different from what it was just a couple of decades ago.
It is. And, you know, again, we're kind of fighting over the last of the scraps that are left behind in terms of what our biological legacy is. And hopefully, you know, the future generations, my daughter, you know, her 9-year-old generation will see the forest that we have today. But if we keep going in this direction, there's going to be a lot less of it.
Dominic Della Sala, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, president and chief scientist of the Geost Institute in Ashland. We are talking about the pushback to the widened timber bill proposed for Western Oregon for the ONC lands managed by the BLM. Essentially a trade-off offered where half the land would be more intensively managed for timber, the other half would be preserved, but obviously there's an argument over what gets preserved. Let's take a call from, let's go, Bill in Sunny Valley. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hello, Jeff. This is something that's going to affect the trees. What it is, there's somebody that's currently planning to rezone their property out here, over 200 acres, and they want to mine over 100 acres down to bedrock. And it's a problem we have with that is it's down to about 70 feet on the average, and that'll take the water from around, not just residential area, but, you know, our five people, but as well as the BLM forest around the area. And so it's not just the logging that's going to hurt the trees and stuff, but also, you know, the big mining projects like this. And just wanted to kind of extend that out that they're throwing it out there, throw it out there a little bit.
All right, appreciate that, Bill. And let's get Dominic's take on this. Logging, obviously, the major issue that is before you with this bill proposed by Senator Ron Wyden. But is mining as much of a concern within the forest ecosystems?
It is, and it is down in southwest Oregon where there are a number of nickel laterite industrial-scale mines proposed that would be huge holes in the ground with a lot of development in the surroundings. So the listener, I can definitely sympathize for that, and the part of the problem that we're dealing with here is the federal lands are the last of what we have that are still intact in this region. And so if this legislation goes through, chances are many of the listeners in this area could wind up with a clear cut in their backyard at some point, because the BLM checkerboard is a series of public lands juxtaposed with private lands where a lot of development occurs in that private matrix. And so if you also are clear-cutting those BLM lands and you're a landowner and you live next to that BLM parcel, you could wake up someday and see a clear-cut in your backyard in addition to all the other activities like mining that are happening on private and public lands.
It made sense to somebody back in the 19th century to go ahead and give alternate sections. So we're talking 1 mile squares alternating. So, yes, it does look like a checkerboard on a map where the BLM is the agent in charge and where there is private land all around it. And it's all interspersed. The BLM has done lots of work over the years to try to get some contiguity, trading some land to make sure that they're blocking it up, as they say, but not a consistent process. Let's take another call from Brad in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dominic Della Sala from Geos Institute.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for letting me on. I have a couple of concerns. One is that they don't seem to be valuing the sequestration of carbon in the forest as a value of the forest. Trees suck carbon out of the air and it becomes cellulose. And when we cut them down, it was that engine of capturing carbon. But my real concern is that people like it, especially in Josephine County, they won't vote to pay for their own police. They've got one of the lowest tax bases in the nation, and yet they keep avoiding paying for their own police department. And then they say, well, we're in dire straits. We need to attack the forest and take the value out of it that would accede to our grandchildren and hurry up and use it so that we don't have to pay for our own police. And it bothers me that they're doing that.
All right. Thanks for that call, Brad. Appreciate it. Yes, at 60 cents a thousand or roughly that, a $100,000 house would spend, what, 60 bucks a year on property taxes? Just for the county services. Your thoughts about that, Dominic?
Well, a couple of points. First of all, the caller is absolutely correct in terms of the carbon sequestration value on these forests. If you look at these, you know, the big moist forests closer to the coast, for example, they are some of the most carbon-dense ecosystems on the planet. That means that those trees basically are big sticks of carbon that are sucking up carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and helping to stabilize our regional climate in a time of global warming. And so by cutting them down, as I mentioned earlier, you're releasing about half of that carbon as a CO2 pollutant, and the type of logging that would occur under the Wyden provision would be very much equivalent to Oregon's dirtiest coal-fired power plant. So we're not valuing those forests for their climate benefits, their water benefits. We're only looking at them as potential two-by-fours. And even if the bill were to go forward, and in 20 years we continue to just clear-cut at double the rate of logging that has been occurring now, in 20 years, we'll be out of forest, the mature ones, and we'll be facing this very same situation. Other, you know, the only difference, it'll be our kids that are dealing with it instead of this generation.
So there are no younger forests that would grow up to be as big as the ones that are that big today?
No, because they get put back into a timber rotation and they'll be clear cut in, you know, another 80 to 100 years, whatever that rotation is. But they won't come back as the ancient forests that have been on the landscape for hundreds, if not thousands of years. Think of the redwoods. They've been here for, you know, thousands of years. And if we put them into a industrial logging system like the Wyden bill is proposing for Oregon's forest, those thousand-year-old forests would never come back because they would be logged and then repeatedly logged over time.
What is your knowledge of the political realities facing this bill? If the Senate should happen to pass it, will the House likely pass it as is?
Oh, I'm sure that the House will pass it. You know, the House already passed the more extreme measure in the DeFazio-Schrader-Walden bill. I think the question becomes whether or not, you know, President Obama will use his veto power on this and whether this bill gets packaged with a national emphasis to increase logging on all national forests, which is what's being considered in the Senate as well. Senator Wyden, Murkowski, Barrasso, a bunch of the senators are considering pretty extreme measures that would increase logging, not just on ONC lands, on BLM, but also all the national forests. So it could appear in a package in front of, you know, the Obama administration sometime in the middle or the end of the year as an omnibus bill.
But given the realities of how this Congress has been working, and much has been said about how little this Congress has delivered in the way of bills, plus a recent set of analyses that indicated that things are slowing down. It seems like most of the major legislation has already passed. It is an election year. Members of Congress very concerned about preserving their jobs. I mean, honestly, do you think there'll be much movement on this year?
I hope not. But then again, you know, I think what we've been advising Senator Wyden to do is to use his new chairmanship as the chair of the Senate Financing Committee to reauthorize the county payments until we can find more creative solutions that don't go into the forest and pillage the last remaining mature trees to solve the county's budget problems. And as one of the listeners mentioned earlier, you know, the counties have to have a certain amount of responsibility in taking on the services that we all need, which means that each one of us has to do our part in paying the appropriate property taxes.
We will have to keep an eye on this as the year goes on. I'm sure there'll be many more wrinkles before this is all said and done in these particular bills. And then, of course, Congress changes over with the election. So we will see what happens before then. Dominic Della Sala is the president and chief scientist of the Geos Institute in Ashland. We've been talking about the plan for managing Western Oregon timber managed by the BLM in the Senate. Thanks so much for joining us, Dominic.
Thanks for having me on.
That'll do it for this hour of the Exchange. We'll talk about water in hour number two. Please stay tuned.